Okay, good afternoon. Let's see. So the middle of the term has arrived, and Wednesday will be the midterm. Okay, and the website has most of the information about it. Let's see, I guess it says one page, one sheet of notes. And the material is chapters one and two, except the last bit we didn't do, 2.6. And we will not do it. Okay, and let's see what else. Oh yeah, so then for the format, it'll be here at our regular Zoom meeting. Okay, and I guess this afternoon I'll put up a sheet of instructions, but it's basically just what I'm telling you now. Let's see. Oh, yes. And then cameras. So the plan is to have them set up. Let's see if I can do this. I'm making too much of a mess. So it's supposed to be sort of like this so that you can see, so that I can see what you're working on, just as you can now see what I'm working on. So it should be sort of pointed in that way. Okay. And on tomorrow for the quiz, I recommend that you just sort of try it out to make sure that you got your setup all working. So point at your work and try them out in during the quiz tomorrow. Just to get make sure everything's working. Okay, let's see. And then the uploading is much like the homework uploading. Okay, great. And I guess it's probably good to get there a few minutes early just so we can see your ID and whatnot and get everything going. So maybe arrive about 10 minutes early to check ID and get everything going. Okay. And let's see, and then I will share the exam, both sharing the screen as I'm doing now and with a link in the chat box so you can bring it up in some other way if that's easier for you to read. Okay, so exam both on the screen and via a chat box link. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah, there's a question there, whether ID would work. Okay. Other thoughts or questions about the bureaucracy?
Wait, what do you mean? What does it mean by both on screen and via chat box link?
Oh, so what I mean is that I will do as I am now. I will share the screen with an image of a PDF of the exam, and I will also put into the chat box a link to a PDF of the exam. So if it's easier for you to use some device where you can look at that, bring up that link and do whatever you like, print it, or whatever is easier for you. That's an option. Or you can just look at the screen like works right now to see this, this board where I'm writing. Does that make sense? It's best to do it on paper. I prefer paper.
Do we also upload our notes?
Good question. No, I think that probably the best thing to do with the notes is just like with the ID, just kind of hold them up so we can see them. And so we can sort of see what you're looking at. It won't be necessary to upload the notes. We don't need to see the details of the notes. So the exam time is the regular 50 minutes. So it's a 50-minute exam. And the if you look on the web page, I guess I should have said that there's an old exam as well as a practice exam on the web page. A4, A4 is fine if you prefer A4. Okay, A4 letter, right. So 50-minute exam, and there is an old exam, and a practice exam are both up on the webpage. Two different things, but similar. Okay. So I hope that that'll give you some idea of the side. Double-sided is one. Yes, one sheet, so both sides. Yes, after, that's correct. The uploading is not part of the time. So if it takes you longer to do that, that is not counted against your time. So uploading is not part of the timing. Other questions? Okay, very good. So also, if you notice the material, that's all material that has already been covered, okay? So all I wanted to do, So the question in the chat box is about the length and whatnot of the exam. The practice exams are really the best way to look at that. So there are six problems on them, and so those will be very similar in structure to the actual exam. So that's the place to look for information about what the exam will look like. Yeah. Okay, but in any case, I'll see how far we can get with the homework. Any homeworks that I think I do have one more that I just got this morning that I haven't posted yet. So we'll get the rest, as many as we can get up.
When we do the two practice midterms, is there a point where we will have the answers? You know, just to check our
work? Oh, the answers. Yeah, I'll try to post the answers to that. Probably this afternoon, so that you can check this. Yeah, I haven't posted the answers yet. Other questions? Okay. In any case, since we have already covered all the material, I was just planning to either review, or I could do another proof involving a couple of different techniques. But if there's a specific topics that people are more interested in, I can also try to do problems that are more focused on those topics. Okay, so yeah, so if there are topics that you find of particular interest, perhaps you could just put them into the chat, and then we can see. And I'll just maybe keep a little list over here of what I'm seeing there over there in the chat. So, so there was a GCD type proofs question, and then someone else is asking about sets and subsets proofs. And families. Okay, yeah, so there's some induction. Okay, so those are some things, and if I miss putting them over here, let me know in case I miss something. So let's see. Maybe I'll just try one from the text. It seems like several people asked about sets and set families. So maybe I'll just find a proof in the text here that uses sets and set families, and maybe one from the families section, because that way we'll hit both at once. Let's see, so that would be section 2.3. So let me try a set families proof. Okay. So that would be something like this one. Prove that let me choose this separation. Yeah, so there are a couple different types of problems in this section, and one of them is families is proofs. Let me try. I forget which one I already gave you. So let me try one that I didn't. Okay, yeah, let me try this one. So this is number 10A in section 2.3. And so it says the following, if we have a family, and this uses the indexed notation. So if A, and I'm trying to use different fonts for my A, which, okay, maybe I'll try a slightly different way to write it, but in any case, I need a different font for my A so I can tell them apart. So that's my family A. Is equal to a indexed family. So it's a set of all A sub alpha, and indexed means that alpha lives in some indexing set delta. And this is one where you change around the indexing set itself, okay? So it's kind of, the hardest part is just tracking the meaning of the notation. So let's say that we also have, so remember that in this notation, delta is a set, and so is each of the A alphas, and so is script A. So there are lots of different sets lying around at different levels. And we are going to take a subset, gamma, of our delta, like so. Okay. And then what we want to prove is we have the union. Over alpha in gamma. So this is what the structure of a statement involving families of sets. So the union over all alpha and gamma is supposed to be related to the union over all alpha in delta of A alpha. And I'm going to write it in, and then I'm going to prove it. And as usual, I'll sketch the proof like always first. But before I do that, what's the right symbol to go in there? Can anyone see that? So just from the intuition, which one is contained in the other?
Gamma and delta.
Mm-hmm. Right, because this one is the union of those delta one, gamma ones, and this one has the gamma ones, and then it's also got these big, more of them, right? So this is a bigger set on the right-hand side. So what you would expect to be able to show is this containment, okay? And that is, in fact, what you're asked to show. Okay, so sketch. Okay, so as usual from 1.7, we start with trying to get an understanding of what's going on. Okay, and we'll do basically what I just drew. So if I take my sets of, this will be the union over gamma of my A alphas, and then maybe I have some more things. So I have those three, but I have maybe some other sets as well. And so then this red part is going to be the union over delta. So that's a Venn diagram type of way of phrasing. And that's often for me the easiest way to get a handle on what's going on with sets, okay, is to use a Venn type diagram. Okay, and so this looks like it's true. So that's a good sign. All right, so next we want to figure out the logic. All right, and so here we have the subset. So we have this set on the left is a subset of the one on the right. With set proofs, the typical ones are subsets or equals. And just as a refresher, if it had instead asked for equals, which is actually false, but what would you have to prove if you wanted to show that it was equal?
You would have to prove that they're both subsets of each other.
Exactly so. It's two different proofs. You have to prove this and that, right? So it's two different things you have to prove, just like an if and only if, okay? All right, but we're only asked for one of them, so let us do that one. So logic. So the idea is that we're going to assume that we have an element here and show that it's an element over there, and then we'll be done, all right? So that's the logic. So A in the union of alpha in gamma of A alpha implies, that's what we're trying to show, that A is in the right-hand side. Okay, so is that clear? So that's the logic of what we're trying to do. So we want that being in this left side implies it's in the right side. Then we'll be done. Okay, and so what are we going to assume and conclude? The next thing always in our structure planning is, of course, we'll assume that A is in, assume A is in this union. Okay, and so what does that mean? So what does it mean for an element to be in a union? Which quantifier?
Paul?
Yeah, so this is a little bit confusing. So we were taking all of them together, but if I think instead about the element, I have some elements here and I want to check whether that element is in the union, what do I need to find?
A is an element of A alpha for every alpha in gamma.
Not quite. Every alpha would mean that it was in this one and that one and that one. It was inside of this little bit in the middle, right? Right. It's backward, right? So to be in the union means that it's in one of them. Does that make sense? So it's the other way around. Anyway, let me write it out and see if everyone agrees or at least is not willing to disagree. So so we have that there exists some alpha in gamma with A in A sub alpha. right? Because I hope again, let me run through the log one more time, because this is kind of the important key here. If we're going to take the whole union here, then it's enough to find there are X loaves in any one of them, right? So it's enough to find just one of them. So it's enough that there exists some A alpha that contains it. If we instead required that for all, we would be getting the intersection, right? So if we go back to our little dictionary, the union here over alpha in gamma is related to there exists, and the intersection is related to for all alpha. Okay, so that's part of the dictionary, right? Between sets and logic. Okay, so anyway, it's good to sort of check that it makes sense every time you do that, because it's very easy to get those two mixed up and confused. Okay, so any questions about that? So I claim now that that's what we're going to assume is that there exists this alpha in gamma, and A is in A alpha. Okay, and then so what we're supposed to conclude is that A is in union over alpha in delta of A alpha, and of course that's the same as the one above, except that the delta in place of a gamma, so there exists alpha in delta A in A alpha. So most of it is unpacking the logical statement, okay, of what you're trying to do, right? That's the unpacking. Okay, and so then some ideas if we actually want to try to prove this. So once we have that, how hard is it going to be to show that if there exists an alpha in delta, in gamma, that where A is in A alpha, then there exists an alpha in delta. So if we have alpha in gamma and A is in A alpha, well, if alpha is in delta, then what do I know about its relationship to gamma?
Since gamma is a subset of delta, that mm-hmm. also means alpha is an element of delta.
Exactly right. Okay, so everyone follow that? And so we've already got what we needed, that it's an element of delta. And we also had this fact is still true, that A is in A alpha. And so we will be done. Okay. So, any questions about that? So that's the logic, and so that's the sketch. Any questions about the sketch before we compile it all into an actual proof? Okay, so let's just try the proof then. So let's see, so proof. So we will, as usual, we just sort of assume the logic part and start here with the proof. So we will assume, A is in the left-hand side of the union over alpha and gamma of A alpha. Hence, there exists alpha in gamma with A element of A alpha. You could add more words if you wanted to. I'm writing in a fairly symbol-dense way, but you can do it either way. Since gamma is contained in delta, we have that alpha is also contained in delta. Therefore, A is contained in the union over alpha in delta of A alpha. So it's fairly short. The key is getting everything unpacked correctly, so you know what it is you have to prove. Okay. Any questions about that one? Oh, let me look at my list. Okay. All right, so if there are no questions with that, maybe I'll try one more proof. So there was a suggestion that maybe something involving GCDs. So what I could do is go and prove theorem 2.5.2, which is the existence and uniqueness of the division. So the division algorithm proof. It's actually kind of tricky to set up, but I think I can do that one, and maybe that will clarify. And it also uses a couple bits of logic, so I'll try that one. So, if you think of other topics, feel free to put them into the chat box. Okay, so here's a theorem 2.5.2, the division algorithm. Okay, and I'll see how long it takes. Maybe we'll just do part of it. Okay, so the theorem is as follows. We have two natural numbers, so n, and use the same letter so it is here. So zero is less than, m is less than or equal to n, then our natural numbers should be a verb there, our natural numbers, we have there are unique Q and R, with N equals Q times M, so this is our division algorithm, plus R, okay? And R is the remainder, and that means that it lies somewhere between zero and M, okay? So that's our claim. It's something we've used a lot, but we can now go and prove it using some. We just assumed it previously, okay? All right, so the sketch. All right, so of course, understanding it, as usual, this is something that's familiar. So by now we're fairly familiar with it. But let me just do one short example. Let's see if we have M equals, 5 and n equals 13. Then we have 13 is equal to 2 times 5 plus 3. And so this is the Q and this is the R. And so that's what we're trying to prove. Okay, so that's the goal. All right, that's the and so next the logic. The logic is one of the more interesting aspects of this proof. So let's try to look at the logic. Okay, so first of all, what type of quantifier do we have here?
Is it there exists unique?
Yes, it's there exists unique, right? And that's kind of an odd quantifier. So it's a good one to keep in mind. So this is we have there exists unique. So which requires, and does anyone remember what we have to do if we're gonna prove there exists unique? They're basically two separate things, right? So the exists and the unique, they're just two separate things. You have to do both of them. So
there exists some Q and R such that M times Q plus R equals N. And then you have to prove the uniqueness, which means if there exists another solution that solution must equal that Q and R.
That's exactly right. So we have to show that there exists one, like you said. And so that's one thing. And then two, we have to show that if there are two solutions, they're the same. Which is the uniqueness, right? So they're just two separate things, and we have to do both of them. Okay, and now there's one other way that I want to think about this. If we look at our quantifiers, let me try to write this out precisely here. So we have for all, so if I just track through everything, first we have a for all, two of them, an N and an M, and then we have an exists unique. So it's kind of a complicated formula. So let me try to formulate it correctly. So for all N in N, so all natural numbers, okay? Then it says for all of these M's, okay, and so, but these M's have to be less than or equal to N. Okay, so that's the next quantifier. Then we get to the one we were working on earlier. There exists a unique. And what we have, there exists unique are this Q and the R. Okay, and then we have the facts that we need, which are these two facts. There's an and there, right? So we need both of those facts. So we have N is equal to Q times M plus R. And we have the second fact that R lies between 0 and M. Okay. So any questions about the structure? So that's the logical structure of the sentence. Okay. So we have for all, they're just unique. Okay, so this is advertises a kind of complicated logical structure, and it is so. So the for all n in n, what type of proof might be relevant there? Anyone? So the for all n and n is a hint that this might be an inductive proof. Okay. Also, the fact that it occurs in section 5.2. So this is if I write this as my p of n, then I've got something which is of the form for all n and n p of n. Okay. So this might involve use induction. And induction is always the form for all n and n p of n, right? This is always what it is. And so then this part here would be my p of n. Okay. All right. Then if we're going to use the induction, we will assume, conclude part. So we're going to assume a P of M for every M less than N. And this, I think, was also something that someone asked about. This, what kind of induction is that?
Generalized induction.
Correct. So this would be a generalized induction. And it's generally fine just to make that assumption. And then if in your proof you don't end up using all of it, then you can just go down to the easier statement of the PMI, the principal mathematical induction. Okay. All right, so now let's try to run through some ideas here for the proof. Okay, so we have to do both things. Let's start with uniqueness. So let's try uniqueness. So for uniqueness, what do we need to do? So assume there are two solutions. Okay, and show that they're the same. So let's just try that. So assume n is equal to q times n plus r and m plus r, and n is equal to q tilde times m plus r tilde are two solutions, and they're both solutions. So r is between zero and m, and r tilde is between zero and m. Okay, and then we just want to show that they're the same. Hence, all right, so we have that we can just subtract them. So n minus zero is equal to n minus n, which is equal to q times m plus r minus q tilde times m minus r. And if I collect terms, that's q minus q tilde times m plus r minus r tilde. Okay. All right. And let's see if I move those over to the other side. So we get r tilde minus r is equal to q minus q tilde times m. Okay, so now what? So what do we know about r tilde minus r? So what are the biggest and smallest values that that one could have?
Well, on the left, zero.
Okay. What if I'm subtracting something that's from, what if this one's zero and this one's like three?
Oh, maybe minus m.
Correct, that's right. So the smallest it can be is minus m, right? If that first one were zero and the second one were minus m, and then the biggest is positive m. Okay, so that's the bounds we get. Okay. But we have that m here, what we've just written is that m divides r tilde minus r, and r tilde minus r lives between minus m and m. So what does that require r tilde minus r to be?
R tilde minus r must be zero.
Exactly. And that's what we needed. Hence, r tilde minus r equals zero. So in other words, r tilde is equal to r. So we have at least that the r is unique. Okay. But now we're gonna get that the q is unique. Zero is equal to r tilde minus r is equal to q minus q tilde times m. Okay, and but so we have m times something is equal to zero, so so that something is equal to zero. So zero is equal to q minus q tilde, so q is equal to q tilde. Okay, so that so we can get uniqueness by without using any induction, we managed to get uniqueness. Quite about that one. Okay, and so then the second part would be to try to get the existence.
Could you go over why it's equal to zero?
Which one? There were two things that were equal to zero. The Q one and the R.
R tilde minus R. Yeah.
That one. Yeah. That's because so I'm combining these two facts. So one is that we have that M divides R tilde minus R, and the other one is the fact that R tilde minus R lives between, strictly between, minus M and M. Okay, so so the multiples of M are minus M and then zero and then M and then 2M, this is something that's between minus M and M, and it's a multiple of M. Is that clear enough? Oh, how did we get that inequality? Okay, yeah, so where did that one come from? So that one came from, okay, so two things. So first of all, are people happy with the transition? Once we know these two facts, that M divides R tilde minus R, and that we have this inequalities, then we get that, that the only value is zero. That much is okay?
Okay. It makes sense in my head, but
how would you write it more carefully?
Like, do you not need to write more?
Yeah, I probably will write more. Let's see. So, let's see. So, what would be the clear? So, this is still the sketch, right? So, to write it out carefully, let's see. I guess you don't have to write very much more. I mean, I guess what I would probably do is the following. So let me continue in red here. So what does that tell us? So we know that R tilde minus R is equal to times some S is equal to M, right? That's what it means for M to divide it. Whoops, wrong way, sorry. Put it on the wrong side. Is equal to M times S, right? That's what it means for M to divide it. M times something is equal to it. Okay, so we know that this M times S is between M and minus M. And then we can divide through by M. So we have minus one is less than S is less than one. And at that point, we need to claim that the only integers between minus one and one are zero. So that I think would be enough detail. Right?
That makes sense.
Thank you. Right, so when we go and write it out in detail. Okay. Any other questions about that part? There's still the question about how we got the inequality. All right. Okay, so then let me go back to where we got the inequality. So we got the inequality from the fact that R and R tilde are both between zero and M, okay? So the largest that this can be is going to be largest one here minus the smallest one here. And the smallest that it can be is the smallest one here minus the largest one there. Okay. So that's where that came from. Any other questions about that one?
I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. When you have 0 equals q minus q tilde times m plus r minus r tilde, is that mm-hmm. statement sufficient enough to show that r minus r tilde 0 and q minus q tilde 0? Because we know that m has to be greater than 0. Would we have to like show
yes. further? Yes. So you're saying right when, from here going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. So once we're here, so this was something that we knew. That's how. So this we already computed, right?
Or no, before and, that part.
Oh, like before when that.
We did n minus n. So right after the hens, the first hens.
Oh, right up here. Oh,
yeah.
Oh. So here, what we know is that this is 0. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we know that these two are equal. Just by subtracting that from both sides. That makes sense. So.
Yeah. So you can't just use that statement to directly show that.
Well, we don't know this yet.
Okay.
Right. That's where we're trying to go. We still have to prove that.
Okay.
Right. So right now it could be that that both sides are non-zero.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So far we just said that those two sides are the same. And now we're going to use that, leverage that to get that they're both 0. And the only way that's going to work is because this thing has to be so small. If this were say m, then this could be 1, and that could be m, and then the whole thing would be true. Okay. Okay. Any other questions about the structure? Okay, so given the time, maybe what I will do then is just try to transform this part of it into a detailed proof so that we can see how to do that and make that clear, okay? All right, so proof of uniqueness. Okay, so this says that there's at most one solution. No calculators will be needed on the exam. I hope they haven't been very useful for the homework so far. Okay, so let's just try to translate this sketch here into a detailed proof. Okay, and so as we did over here, the logic remains the same. And so we're going to make the same assumption that we have these two solutions. Then we're going to go down and get that they are, in fact, the same solution. All right, so proof of uniqueness. So just like we did before, assume there are two solutions. And of what? So we're going to assume that we have our existential quantifiers. There exists is m and n, so we're in the setting. So 0 less than m less than or equal to n, and then we're going to assume we have the two solutions. N is equal to q times m plus r, and n is equal to q tilde times m plus r and. There's a lot of ands. It's not a great sentence, English sentence, but it's fine mathematical. We have that r and r tilde both are between 0 and m. Okay, so everyone's happy with that. So that's what we're supposed to assume. That's what we assumed over here. We're in our setting, so we've got these n and m's, and we have one solution, and we have two solutions, okay? And so that's our setup for uniqueness. Okay, and then I just do what we did over here. Hence, okay, and what did we end up using? So let's see, we needed that maximum difference between the R's was M, so or minus M, so let's do that. So hence, minus m is less than r tilde minus R, which is less than M. Okay, so that's using our previous two facts. Okay, so we also use that the difference between N and N was zero, right? So zero is equal to N minus N is equal to, just copying what we had over here. But let's see, what did we end up with? Let me just finish with what we ended up with. So we have a Q minus Q tilde times M plus R minus R tilde. Okay, so that's what we computed previously, and it's okay. Hence, okay, so now we can push that onto the other side, and we have R tilde minus R is equal to Q minus Q tilde times M, okay? And we knew that we were going to want to divide by M, so let's do that now. So R tilde minus R over M is equal to Q minus Q tilde. Okay. Since dividing this previous one by one, we have minus one is strictly less than R tilde minus R over M is less than one. We have is an integer. We have R tilde minus R over M is equal to zero. Okay, so we redid the logic a little bit to make it shorter as we tidied up our proof. Any questions about that so far? So we have R tilde minus R over M is equal to zero. And so we're getting close, hence R tilde minus R is equal to zero. Okay, and then we can go back and look what we have above. We have R tilde minus R is equal to Q minus Q tilde times M. So this is equal to Q minus Q tilde times M. And now we're in the situation that you were mentioning earlier, where we have those two things are not only equal, but they're both equal to zero. Okay, and so then we're in good shape. Is equal to zero. Therefore, R tilde equals R, and Q tilde equals Q. Q. Okay, so we have the uniqueness. Yeah, so that's kind of a long one, but that's how that goes. Any questions about how that proof was restructured? Okay, I'm out of time, but I will stick around, but I will stop the recording.